Shalom Ayudim, Shalom Abinu Noach, Shalom Nagoyim. It is the evening of the fourth day, Yud Gimel B'Chodesh Kislev, Parshas Vayishlach, Tavshin Ayin Vav, the evening of the third day, Tuesday, 24 November 2015, webcasting from the latest and purest of Islam's homicidal attacks on Jews. My book is full of them, just in the 20th century, that is, but I think there have been similar horrors in every century of Islam. Every century registered a pogrom, or worse, somewhere in Arabic. And I say that the latest is this jamboree of knifings. Yesterday there was the one by two teenage Arabian she-devils at Machane Yehuda, the famous outdoor market in Jerusalem. I'm sure some of you saw that online, those two vixens swinging their knives, striking a fellow Arab in the head, by the way, with scissors one of them had. And the knifing also yesterday at the gas station on Route 443. Of a soldier whose uncle was blown to his death back in 2003 at the famous Cafe Hillel bombing. Today, another attempted vehicular homicide by another barbaric he-devil who crashed his car into several cars, I think, belonging to civilized Jews, wounding four. The good news is the decision by the government to boost troop presence in Judea and Samaria, which is a temporary thing, but consider as well, it is considering as well, building bypass roads in Judea and Samaria. One actually was planned to avoid Beit Umar and Al-Arub on the road from Jerusalem to Hebron, between Gush Etzion, this intersection, and Hebron. There was such a plan during the last Intifada, but it was nixed by Defense Minister Yitzhak Mordechai before he was run out of political life for sexually aggressing against female staffers in the army. Of course, if it is built, world anti-Jewry will howl like jackals at this latest act of racist apartheid in Israel. But so what? They have been yelling and yowling like that since the mid-1970s, so what else is new? The good news was also a government plan to do exactly what yours truly suggested last week. The families of the killers should be immediately, I say, with the clothes on their backs, pushed through a gate into the Gaza rectangle. The Prime Minister also wants to see Arabs with citizenship lose it for terrorist involvement. Last week, some of them in Jaljulia were arrested for joining ISIS. For sure, the enlightened will wail at the injustice of stripping natives of ancient Philistia of their birthright to be citizens here. Well, I don't think that's a punishment found in the UK or the US or Canada. I doubt it. You can be shot for treason or hung, but not forced out of the country. Well, some countries have it. The PM also wants the families of Arab terrorists in Judea and Samaria, beyond, as I understand, the immediate family, to be barred from working in Israel if a relative is a terrorist. Minister Yuval Steinitz is also talking about shutting down the internet for the Arabs in Judea and Samaria because, like ISIS, they use their media for anti-Jew purposes. I've been calling for war against their media, too, and that, too, is now being talked about. You know, the moderate, peace-loving PA media, electronic and print. It's about time. PMW has been posting daily a truly poisonous and demented age-old Jew hatred on the official PA site. The good news here is the attention, the spotlight now put on the PA media, which PMW has been tracking for 20 years and not having much impact. If I were Bibi, I would broadcast to the planet the sick and crazy anti-Semitic fantasies that Mahmoud Abbas's minions post every day now. There's also a link on the Arut Sheva site, for technical reasons I can't post it for you, of a political commentator in Cairo on TV, an attractive woman, presenting her view that ISIS is an American-Israeli-British front. This is basically the same mind work at work after 9/11 in Araby, where most people believed it was the Mossad up to its old tricks. Only now, this attitude is packaged in a much more presentable fashion. Here is this attractive woman dressed in modern clothing, sitting in a modern TV studio, talking calmly, but expressing an inner life of fantasies of evil directed at Muslims. And, of course, in the most deceitful, dishonest way, ISIS is the creation of the Brits, the Israelis, and the Americans. For Arabs like her, like Saeb Arakat, like the PA that says IDF soldiers are murdering ancient ones here and planting knives at the scene, life itself is a conspiracy of deceit. Nothing is as it seems. Like Obama, who navigates the day, lying nonstop. And not only him, I noted before the odd coincidence of Obama and Kerry and Hillary lying all the time. And I think in all three cases, it stems from a profound, meaning very deep, sense of inferiority and a fear of being found out. I think at some level they know they are way over their level of competence. And the way they deal with it is by constantly lying. In addition, Hillary just proved herself, as never before, unfit to be president, as Kerry is unfit for their mutually abysmal misunderstanding of the Middle East. Last Thursday, Clinton spoke before the Council on Foreign Relations and said this, quote, "Islam is not our adversary. Muslims are peaceful and tolerant people and have nothing whatsoever to do with terrorism. The obsession in some quarters with a clash of civilizations or repeating specific words like radical Islamic terrorism isn't just a distraction. It gives these criminals, these murderers, more standing than they deserve," close quote. What can I say? This reminds me of Tzipi Livni and Yossi Beilin defining the violence here as a political, not a religious problem, because that is the reality they prefer to imagine. "Muslims are peaceful and tolerant," says Hillary, who wants to be president. Heaven help us. Her election would be yet another terrible omen that America is disintegrating. I'd add it to the item I saw on Fox yesterday. About 40% in a poll, 40% of the millennial students in American colleges want government enforcement of bans on offensive speech. Has no one in their education, in high school or now college, told them that by definition, free speech means offensive speech to someone? Laws protecting the right to say, "I love my mom and her apple pie," are not needed. This poll also suggests the population wanting its government to take responsibility for things that the founders never dreamed of, like health insurance. For a communist like Barack Obama, it's right for the U.S. to have a health care system similar to the one in Cuba that he has removed from its well-deserved isolation as a communist dictatorship. If Hillary is nominated, even after the incompetence and dishonesty on her part already known in the public square, this too will reveal an electorate unworthy of self-government. Even Thomas Jefferson, the most radical of founding fathers who wanted democracy in America, when all the deep thinkers in old Europe told him the common man is too stupid and uneducated to rule himself, Jefferson agreed that democracy depended on a mature, educated, thoughtful electorate. Democratic rule was not for illiterates. But he believed in the common man in the states, the colonies at that point. Fox TV's Jesse Waters does these man-in-the-street interviews asking the most basic questions about American history and politics. And what he finds is simultaneously hilarious and horrifying. But I digress. I started off trying to keep up with the homicidal maniacs here. But there's also good news, I think, of a government moving forward determined to solve this latest security problem. As Bibi has said, we solved problems in the past and we'll solve this one too. Also encouraging is the growing awareness and disgust with the PA media's outrageous fantasy life. John Kerry was here today with reports of his drive to improve the life of the ancient ones as a way of stemming the current violence. This is like other liberal idiots who think that the 9/11 maniacs were desperately mired in poverty, desperate for a better life, instead of being upper-class types for whom money was no object. I look forward to January 2017 when Kerry and Obama leave the stage and Bibi will be free to express his opinion about the two of them. Shalom, ateret panah.
Speaking before of Hillary Clinton pronouncing Muslims peaceful and tolerant, we also had an Israeli player, Ambassador Ron Dermer, speaking at the annual ZOA dinner, who rejected the idea that, quote, the problem itself is Islam. He said, faiths get interpreted in different ways at different times. For most of the last 1,400 years, Islam was much more tolerant to minorities than Christianity was. Jews of all people should know this, close quote. Well, I would not want to embarrass the otherwise commendable Ron Dermer in public, but in private I would ask him what his sources are for this comment. I would ask him to give me a reading list of books in which I could read up on the life of the Jews in Islam that he has read, which I doubt, and that is because it's just not so that the Jews lived better under Muslims than under Christians. Not a century in Islam without a major persecution somewhere, in addition to the daily restrictions and humiliations of Jews in those regimes. For sure, there were good times or better times and worse times, depending on the reigning Muslim despot. As in Europe, some of them depended on Jewish advisors and financiers, but overall the common Jew was an oppressed Jew, restricted in where he could and could not live. For 1,400 years, there was no civil liberties union in any Islamic jurisdiction. Jews lived on sufferance. Jews, according to Sharia, could not testify in a court proceeding against Muslims. They were denied the right to ride horses. They could ride only on donkeys. They were denied the right to build synagogues. 1991, yours truly was in Yemen with members of our group of five, working with the U.S. State Department to better the lives of 2,000 Jews in that country at the time. And we davened on Shabbos in someone's mini salon, so to speak. The Jews still lived in two-story mud huts, practically, or houses. And that was because they were forbidden to build a synagogue in their community. They were also forbidden to bear weapons. In a populace in which every male outside the cities was armed, think of what that means when you, say, get into a fender bender on the road with an Arab. Both drivers step outside, and the Arab is armed, and the Jew is not, and the Jew then will behave accordingly, meekly, which is the way Jews are supposed to behave toward believers. I spent years researching life on the Barbary Shore, where hundreds of Americans were enslaved for various periods, and in the process, without expecting it, learned a lot about the Jewish communities in Morocco, Algiers, Tunis, Tripoli,
In Algiers, the Jews ran the mint, for among the denizens of that walled medieval town, the science of metallurgy, not to mention literacy, was not their forte. In all the Barbary communities, the Jews were the bankers. Dominating that business were two families, the Bakris and the Bujnaks, who were the Sephardic Rothschilds of the Mediterranean. With offices in all the Barbary towns, as well as Izmir in Turkey and Leghorn in Italy, Marseille and Toulon in France, and very much like the Rothschilds, at the same time, at the end of the 18th century, the local offices were run by a son or a son-in-law of the patriarch of the families. As I wrote my book, there were actually two Jewish communities in the Barbary cities. The old one of many centuries standing, pre-1492, and then the post-1492 refugees from Spain, who were so much more advanced. The two communities were subject to different rules and regulations. The older one lived in a ghetto and was required to dress in black. The newer ones lived outside the ghetto, but in Algerian Arabic, it's called a hara. But they lived on what was called the Jews' Street. They wore European clothes and were called by the locals Christian Jews because they wore the clothes of Europeans. And they commonly enjoyed the capitulations, as they were called, the protection of a European country in the Ottoman Empire. The Barbary cities were subject to the Ottoman Porte, as it was called in Istanbul. Overall, though, over the 3 years of fascinating research into my primary sources, diaries, government records, the picture of Jewish life in Islam, in Arabi, was misery. In Yemen, the Jews were required to be the street cleaners, meaning those who tended the open sewers, running with human waste and animal droppings, and therefore were considered unclean. In Morocco, where there were no deep water ports with proper docks, passengers and cargo arriving were transported back and forth to the beach on lighters, rowboats. And when passengers from Europe came ashore, which meant stepping from the boat into the surf, the Jews were forced to serve as human pack animals. They had to wade in, and the travelers would climb on their shoulders to be transported to the dry land. In medieval Tunis, Jews had to wear a strip of yellow cloth on their backs of their necks, to be identifiable in public. In Morocco, there were times they were required to wear one black shoe and one red shoe. In public, they could be slapped, spit upon, pelted with rocks, but forbidden to defend themselves. All they could do was run away. So I wish the otherwise praiseworthy Ron Dermer would not sound like Hillary Clinton, speaking the obligatory fantasy of how nice the Muslims were to Jews. Tell that to Maimonides. That too is in my book. Born in Cordoba, in Spain, in 1135, at the age of 13, he had to run for his life from the fanatical Almuwahidun sect, ran to Morocco, where he wrote his views on how to deal with homicidal Muslims threatening Jews either convert or die. And then when Morocco became unlivable for the same reason, he fled to Fatimid Egypt, where things were better. Only there he received a letter from the Jews in Yemen, where the community was being persecuted terribly by the local despot, who just also happened to be a Jewish apostate. So no, it was the secularist, post-religious European Zionists who fostered the fantasy that life was better for Jews under Islam than in Christendom. In truth, both were miserable to Jews, if not in identical ways.
עבדו את השם בשמחה, בואו לפניו, ירננה. עבדו את השם בשמחה, בואו לפניו, עבדו את השם בשמחה, בואו לפניו, ירננה. עבדו את השם בשמחה, בואו לפניו, ראו כי השם הוא האלוקים, הוא עשנו ולא אנחנו, ראו כי השם הוא אלוקים, אנחנו עמו וצונאיתו. עבדו את השם בשמחה, בואו לפניו, ירננה. עבדו את השם בשמחה, בואו לפניו, בואו. עבדו את השם בשמחה, בואו לפניו, ירננה. עבדו את השם בשמחה בואו לפניו או הוא כי השם הוא אלוקים הוא עשנו ולא אנחנו עבדו כי השם הוא אלוקים אנחנו עמו וצובר איתו עבדו את השם בשמחה בואו לפניו גרננה עבדו את השם בשמחה בואו לפניו עבדו את השם בשמחה בואו לפניו עבדו את השם בשמחה בואו לפניו עבדו כי השם הוא אלוקים הוא עשנו ולא אנחנו עבדו כי השם הוא אלוקים אנחנו עמור אצל מריתו
עבדו את השם בשמחה בואו לפניו אביר ענה עבדו את השם בשמחה
בואו לפניו אביר ענה בואו לפניו
בואו לפניו
בואו לפניו אביר ענה עבדו את השם בשמחה בואו לפניו אביר ענה עבדו את השם בשמחה בואו לפניו עבדו את השם בשמחה בואו לפניו ירננה עבדו את השם בשמחה בואו לפניו עבדו כי השם הוא אלוהים הוא עשנו ולא אנחנו עבדו כי השם הוא אלוהים
אנחנו עמו רצון מריתו
You're listening to www.deprogramprogram.com, broadcasting from the hills of Judea. I'm Shai Ben-Tekoa. And now, another story related to Ron Dermer's speaking up for Muslims. There have been numerous reports on American Jewry's official bodies speaking up for Obama's plan to bring tens of thousands of Syrians into the country. Maybe because Dermer remains an American Jew at heart, he spoke the way he did. Anyway, I find it a sorry business that the Orthodox Union, the OU, has joined the dying conservative movement and the ludicrous reform movement in flacking for this policy and for all the wrong reasons. I think they would fulfill their patriotic responsibilities to the United States far better by insisting that none of these people be brought into the country. It's simply outrageous that Western states are not demanding that the officially 56 Muslim states and 21 officially Arab states take in their brethren. Saudis have 100,000 empty air-conditioned tents now that the Hajj is over. It's also simply outrageous that there are so many of these refugees who are healthy young males who should be staying in their countries and fighting for their beloved patria. But most outrageous are the Jewish groups who are comparing the two refugee groups. Today's refugee Arabs and the Jews in 1938 denied shelter by every state at the Evian Conference. There's no comparison whatsoever. These Arabs are not the victims of non-Arabs who believe in insane fantasies about their inherent evil who want to exterminate them. These are simply people running from the chronic fratricide so common in Arab lands. As I said, when this flood of people began, let's help them with money to settle them among their brethren. Western civilization is under no moral obligation to settle in its midst people who don't share Western values, don't want to change their way of life, and worst of all, want to change Western life. This is simply madness. An American Jewry does the United States no good by backing this politically correct and socially insane policy of taking in thousands of people hostile to their way of life. For sure, these American Jews don't want to be seen as Islamophobic, and again, that's a mistake. Even the Holocaust Museum in Washington has gotten on the bandwagon of finding similarity between Jews fleeing Nazi Europe and these Syrians, who are among the worst of the Arabs, leastwise in Israeli history, far more barbaric than the Egyptians and the Jordanians. HIAS as well, H-I-A-S, the venerable Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society, is also on the bandwagon. I can understand the pressure to be non-exclusivist, but in the long run, a policy of not taking an official position, if not an outright opposition to the Syrian refugees, might be the better politic thing to do.
בלילות עלי הסוף עלינו. אחז לך באמונתך בלילו עלי עשור ועלי נבל עלי היגיון בחינו להגיד בבוקר חסדך באמונתך בלילו עלי עשור
So let's end on some positive notes. For one, M.K. Bezalel Smotrich submitted a bill today allowing the government to shut down mosques where incendiary sermons are routine. Of course, this would entail, or should entail, the government proclaiming to the whole world that this is our historic ancient homeland, the nuclear core of our religion, and we will not tolerate non-Jews calling on others to murder us. We did this in the past. We kicked out of the country such inflammatory preachers, and we have to do it again. Only in the past, when we did it, we were self-confident. We believed in the rightness of our lives here. Think of the infamous episode of the 12 spies sent to scope out the promised land, who came back whining that the locals were too big and too powerful and looked on us as grasshoppers, when really it's how they looked upon themselves. And it was a great help, in retrospect, when Israel did boot malefactors out of the country at that time, there was no Palestinian people in the public mind. They had yet to be invented, yet to be mentioned in the public square. So I think Israel has to return to true and healthy self-love. That should include, finally, slaying the Palestinian dragon, the fantasy of an unheard-of nationality with the right to independence smack dab in the middle of our tiny country 50 miles across. And the second piece of good news is the decision of the new multiplex cinema in Jerusalem to abide by its original contract with the municipality that gave the company the land not to be open on Shabbos. The enlightened, of course, are whining that they have for years on Shabbos had to leave Jerusalem to find some entertainment. No argument, but if there is at least one city in the state of Israel that observes the fourth commandment, surely it has to be Jerusalem. And if the enlightened don't like that, they are free to move to Tel Aviv and Haifa. Anyway, that's it for this evening. Laila Tov, Me'eretz Yisrael.